Welcome back to Beyond Sermons, where we seek Jesus Christ beyond the pulpit.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We just had a spirited conversation about evolution and some of the controversial titles of Darwin's book, and it's in, you know, maybe its implication in society over the many years and decades since its publishing date. We're probably going to switch gears just a little bit here, and we're going to still stick with the evolution role, but we're going to talk about it more in sort of the modern scientific approach, and it's dealing with dating methods. We find a bone or something, we excavate some sort of fossil or something, you know, how are we able to put a specific date on that time frame? From your perspective, Dave, how do you view the dating methods that are being used today?
Well, you're talking about some real technical stuff.
Yes.
First off, and so I feel a little bit deficient in being able to give a good, insightful explanation, only because I'm not 100% familiar with the terms and stuff of this nature.
But yeah,
yes, I studied
no,
it.
No, that's a good point, because in my quick research, I came across, must have been like 25, 30 different types of dating methods using a variety of different like elements. So I think the one that I remember from grade school is carbon dating.
Yes.
And then, you know, after doing a little bit more digging and Googling, I came across like uranium, I think uranium 238, as well as polonium. Based upon this conversation for now, let's just talk about carbon dating. That might be more familiar with, with junior high science classes.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've been in junior high, by the way.
Yeah.
But
longer for me, buddy.
But as far as like carbon dating, in your mind, why would you question the science behind carbon dating?
Well, what I have heard about and what little I've studied about it, like I say, you know, these are very, very in-depth, long-term testing methods that have to be repeated and repeated and repeated. But here we've already talked about some of the biases that occur either through the creationism type of thought process or worldview, or the evolutionary long-age Earth way of looking at things within our world. Let me put it that way. I've got to be kind of guarded about how I say these things, because there's some things that I would hope that my tongue would fall out of my mouth because it was incorrectly stated. Mm-hmm. But the carbon issue that we have is that the makeup of living things is carbon-based.
Yeah.
And the way that carbon dating works, to my understanding, is that you take a living thing and it takes in plants. And inside those plants are these carbon particles. And when something dies, of course, it stops taking in the living plants.
Right.
And so the addition of this fresh carbon stops. So it's...
Right.
It's at that level of induction of whenever the animal died.
Right.
And that material is left in the living thing because it's taken into the bloodstream and distributed. So virtually the carbon is all throughout your body. And
including the bones, right?
Yes. And the last time that you took something in then can be tested for deterioration of the carbon 14. And so that deterioration is viewable, testable, and reproducible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is something that you can test over a reasonably short period of time to establish that this thing works.
Tell me something, with the amount of carbon, left in, say, a bone, is that homogeneous? In other words, would you say it's equally distributed?
From what I know about it, it seems like yes.
Okay.
Is a proper answer to that.
Yeah.
There is a problem with that particular system. It has a limit. And it's my understanding from an article that I read quite a while ago now, is that the developer of the Carbon 14 was heard to have said or recorded in one of his responses to a test that they were doing, is that his system is accurate up to 2,000 years.
Oh, just 2,000 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that the testing starts deteriorating in its accuracy fairly quickly, and I don't know what the motivator is of that that would be happening in the deterioration of the carbon.
Yeah.
I kind of have a suspicion that there is a certain amount of carbon available in the air, right, and in the rocks and sand, yeah, where whatever you're coming in contact with, that it's possible that that 2,000-year period would put you into the normal median of carbon saturation for almost anything.
Okay, so
on the Earth, that's my impression of it.
So I'm assuming then carbon dating is not used for like maybe dinosaur fossils that dates back to millions upon millions.
It's used for millions. Yes, it's used for those things.
So,
and because of what I have studied, I would look at it for the 2,000-year period that the guy said that it's pretty darn accurate, and start becoming very scrutinizing about what I would believe about what that particular test might say and stuff that is obviously older than 2,000 years.
Now, there, besides carbon dating, you know, kind of sticking away from, there are other types of dating methods as well, too. I mean, you know, I've learned about like tree rings, you know, and apparently.
Well, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. So now the thing is now I'm hearing that there's a tree out in Taiwan or Japan. I think it's an Asian country. It's called a tiki tree or something like that. Tajiki tree or something like that. And it's supposed to be about 9,258 years old. You know, that's something I came across. So, you know, 9,000, I guess that still sort of falls within the young Earth range.
Could. Yeah, it could, I guess.
You know, you know, so
according to Wikipedia, it could.
I mean, so, you know, when it comes to like tree rings, you know, do you find that supportive of a young Earth when it comes to basically tree rings?
Well, a lot of it has what's the natural, you know, when we say what is the natural age of a spruce, let's say.
Yeah.
When do they start to deteriorate and fall apart and fall over and get assimilated into the earth?
Yeah.
I would hate to be the guy that put a boring or whatever they put through that tree to find out it was 9,000 years old. I wouldn't want to be the one to be responsible for it bleeding to death because I poked it wrong, you know?
Yeah, I think what I did a little reading on that one, actually.
Please help me.
Yeah, I found that pretty interesting because what they did was, in addition to the tree rings, they found that the tree rings were, at least on Wikipedia, that they ended up having to look at the root system of the tree and using, you know, some sort of dating method on the roots of the tree, not just the tree rings itself, to come up with the more extended 9,200 whatever.
Yeah, that could have some bearing with the carbon 14 because
possibly
it would be a part of the living portion of the plant.
Yeah,
but
it's possible.
Again, if it calls into question. And, you know, there's a lot of scientists that say they know more than you and I do.
Yeah.
When, in fact, they have specialized training.
Yeah.
But they have specialized biases as well.
True that.
And so when we talk about these things, you never know when somebody's going to throw a rock at us for saying something that's inappropriate or absolutely wrong. And they may be perfectly justified in doing so based upon their knowledge and education, but here again, if it does tie to this carbon 14 thing, we know that there are some problems with the system of testing using that stuff after 2,000 years. Now, what the inventor of that system meant when he says, yeah, it's accurate up to 2,000 years, what are the implications beyond that? I don't think it was touched on, just the fact that it goes up to this and he feels good about it.
Yeah.
And then he starts being a little more reserved in time after that. If they're using some form of that to test that tree, then, you know, we need to know more information.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely, to render an opinion.
Yeah, definitely. I forgot the absolute spelling of this tree in particular that I'm talking about. I think it's T-J-I-K-K-I. You guys can look it up on Wikipedia if you have, if your curiosity takes you there, people. So I wanted to jump back a little bit now. You know, we talked about fossils and, you know, things being dug up and dated using, you know, whatever atom breakdown, half-life, whatever the buzzword is.
Yeah.
What would you say is wrong with how fossils are being dated?
Well, I
like if you could give a constructive criticism to a scientist today, a modern scientist today, what would it be?
I would probably ask, how do you know?
Okay.
And the reason that I would say that is that there are multiple ways of testing, first off.
Yeah.
Another thing is that when I think about the explanation that I would get, I can anticipate the explanation already. I mean, you know, and they would say, oh, I wasn't going to say that. Well, that whatever they were going to say, I probably could figure it out because I've been questioning these things for a long enough time. I may have heard them already.
Yeah, so I guess another thing I wanted to understand is there's like carbon dating and stuff like that, or whatever, atomic dating, let's call it that for just general sake. Right. Yep, I don't know if that's the proper term, but I think it's radiometric dating is the right term. Yeah, forgive me on that one, people.
That's right.
You know, I mean, are there other clues that archaeologists can use or scientists can use besides, you know, instead of just using, you know, radiometric dating, is there other approaches that can help validate these time ranges?
Right. Yes, there is. And I alluded to the geologic column. You know,
What do you mean by the geologic
column? The geologic column is where they take and they dig a or have a cliff. Let's say, okay, let's use one that we all can relate to, the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Those are cliffs that are exposed because of erosion and, and weather and stuff of this nature. But the point is that you can see a great depth vertically into the strata of the Earth's surface.
Mm-hmm.
And the geologic column that was originally put together was using this, oh my gosh, we found a bone. And then, oh my gosh, I wonder how old that is. And these are just logical ways of looking at it, whether you're a scientist or just curious. If you have somewhat remedial mathematic background, you can tell that you can test it after 10 years. I just touched on this and we changed subjects, but if that 40-foot depth that you found a bone at, you go back and measure that 10 years later, and it's, let's say, 40 foot 2 inches high. Well, that's between a 16th and a quarter additional dirt every year or something of that nature.
Yeah.
So you reverse math that and say, oh, this increases in depth by 2 inches every 10 years. And so you back that off for how deep it is, and then they'll come up with an age for that bone.
Okay, got you.
See, just because of its depth. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I've heard something similar like that, but in a much colder region where they do...
Go there.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I'm already there.
No, you remember that. We'll go there. Where you're going.
Okay.
But the thing that happens is that what they established with that geologic column, this is years ago, that they, okay, we got this bone out of here, Now we know that it's 4 million years old.
Okay.
Because it's this deep.
Right.
So there's no denying that animal died at this level. It was there.
Yeah.
In other words, somebody didn't dig a grave and bury it 40 feet in the ground.
Right.
It died there.
Yeah.
And there's 40 million years or 4 million years worth of dirt over the top of it by our calculation.
Right.
All right. So what happens then is we have just dated this by the depths of the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We pick up another bone. Let's say this proves to have been from an iguana.
Okay.
Let's just pick something. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so we found this bone of an iguana. That's 4 million years old because we were able to calculate it.
Yeah.
So now they find an iguana bone over in the Sahara Desert, and regardless of how deep it is, they say, this is 4 million years old.
Oh, okay.
Because it was found in shale, even though that shale was only 4 feet under the ground.
Oh, okay.
So there must have been erosion over the top of it, and they justify it that way. And that's what's called circular reasoning in a lot of the beginning creationist books and material.
Okay, that sounds
circular
like a buzzword.
Reasoning, because they use the bones to date the rocks, and then they use the rocks to date the bones. That's a justification, a circular justification for what they're trying to establish. It has nothing to do with truth.
So it's kind of like, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Exactly. Exactly. It's an ever-ending question, because there's never an answer.
Okay.
But so they go to these other forms of testing. But if they've got the prejudice that that bone is 4 million years old because they've already figured this out from the geologic column, if they run any kind of test on it, if it's not somewhere around 4 million years, we don't know. They may throw it out.
So with the geologic columns, like, how can they estimate how much dirt piles up upon, you know, for a given time period?
Well, they can test it. See, they can.
Okay, so it sounds like the geological.
They'll measure that.
So isn't that sort of not circular reasoning? Where it's sort of like was there circular reasoning with the establishing the geologic columns to begin with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there was. See, the standard that they use is logic. And I can understand that logic. I'm not disputing that this is wrong. What's wrong is when they take that bone and say this is 4 million years old and apply it to everything throughout the earth. Or they take that depth and say this happened, because the effects of a lot of different things on our earth can affect the rate at which these piles of dirt occur, for one thing, like a dust storm or a volcano, or nothing, just wind blowing it clean.
Yeah. So, I mean, this sounds very similar. This geologic column sounds very similar to something that I guess I read up a little bit more about, is how they can sort of date things using ice layers. Now, this is like up in the Arctic where you can drill down and pull out a cylinder of ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of it up there.
Yeah.
And apparently they can look at, like, if you look closely enough, you can see how, you know, the layers of ice sort of solidify upon one another, and then these lines or something.
Lines show up.
Sort of materialize. And they're able to basically count the lines, and, you know, apparently they could pull a block of ice and see like 600,000 lines, and that somehow indicates that something existed at least 600,000 years or so ago. Like, isn't that similar to the geologic column?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
But they've also found things that they tend to ignore.
Okay.
There was a flight of P-51s, fighter airplanes that were going over to the European war.
This is in relation to the ice column?
Yeah.
Okay.
They ran out of gas, so they landed on a glacier.
Okay.
And the pilots all got picked up and everything, and the War Department just said, just leave them there. We're not going to gas them up again and fly them out of there.
Okay.
So they just left them there. And there was a group of people put together for the exploration of these airplanes. It wasn't but about 50 years before they started looking for these things again, because they should have been absolutely pristine airplanes that are ready to fly if you add gas and go,
Okay.
kind of thing. But the guys that knew these airplanes were there were wanting to get them just for that purpose, to rebuild them and fly them in shows and stuff of that nature, because there's not very many of these old warbirds still around. So the difference in time was 50 years when they first started excavating for these things. They finally did locate them, and they were 250 feet below the surface in 50 years.
Okay.
Something's wrong with saying each one of those lines is a year.
Okay.
Or even a seasonal change. And the Eskimos have been telling researchers for years, those aren't seasonal. Mm-hmm. They're not year-long. Those are every time it snows and the wind blows in a different direction, it's going to make a line.
Okay, gotcha.
So that the dating on these things is absolutely ludicrous.
Mm.
And it's verifiable completely by the fact that these airplanes were 250 feet below the surface of the glacier that was only receiving additional snowfall on top of it, on top of it, on top of it, to give an accurate date.
Yeah.
So now that's the experiment. It's a 50-year-long experiment.
Gotcha.
You get 250 feet additional on top of a glacier.
Yeah.
Is the end of the test. But this scientific community, to the greatest degree, I'm not saying everybody by any means, but to the greatest degree, we'll just ignore that.
Got you. When it comes time for half-life, you have, it's you know, using present-day standards, you know, we don't have 4 million, billion years to wait for, you know, say like uranium-238 to decay down to a certain definitive time frame, whatever. Yeah. So they use a half-life to sort of estimate the full life or the full history of whatever it is they're investigating.
Yeah.
What's wrong with using a half-life as a reliable measurement?
My take on that method is that, first off, we don't live long enough to really be able to run that repeatable test for a half-life of some of these things that they do. Mm-hmm. And I can't say it's right or wrong. But
I mean, is it consistent?
No.
Okay.
See, there are some things you can say with some reliability, because the Institute of Creation Research took some solidified magma from Mount St. Helens, and that thing blew its top back in the, I think it was 1980, something like that. But there was a magma dome developed that ended up not spewing very much, but it cooled, and the rock dating is supposed to start with zero when magma is fresh.
Yeah.
And so they extracted some of these samples from that dome of solidified material and sent it to, they didn't even do the test themselves. They sent it without any knowledge of where it was taken from, I don't believe, just to get a true test, to different independent labs, and they had tests come back 20,000 years, 80,000 years, some of them came back, even if it's 2,000 years, it's only, I think when they extracted it was 10 years old. It should have come back 10 years old if it was an accurate test method. Yeah. Yeah. And so there are things that are problems with these datings, and it's a shame, because we still have to learn this stuff. And I'll say again, as I always do, young people, if you hear this, you gotta pass the science test. So yeah. Learn what the science teacher is trying to teach you, whether you agree with it or not. Mm-hmm. It's not a shouting contest. You need to get your education.
Absolutely.
So learn that and pass the test with a good grade. Don't argue about some of these things that we're talking about with the teacher.
But if you want to get extra credit for education, you did mention an institute, the ICR, the Institute for Creation Research. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I got that right.
Yeah.
I believe you introduced me to this organization a while ago. I believe the website name is icr.org. That's icr.org, and that's the Institute for Creation Research. And I did get a chance to check out the website. It's basically jam-packed with a ton of content, you know, for various education levels. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some PhDs that are, you know, believe in science, but they also believe in God. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have an extra moment and you're looking for colorful infographics and, you know, videos that go into more detail, especially when it comes to radiometric method dating, which is the subject of this podcast. Once again, visit icr.org. That's icr.org.
So let me add
and, one more
something
thing
about that specific subject.
Yes.
Is that the ICR group has run a extensive study called the RATE Project, and that is specifically in regards to this dating stuff.
Okay.
They're talking about the RATE Project, and this material has actually been scientifically journaled and peer reviewed. So this is good stuff.
Okay, and that's the RATE Project.
The RATE Project.
R-A-T-E.
by
okay.
Institute of Creation Research.
All right, everybody. If you want to dig deeper into radiometric dating, carbon dating, all sorts of other dating. This is not a dating podcast. This is a religious podcast that's dedicated to looking at things from a biblical point of view. And today we talked about dating methods. So if you're looking for dating tips, please search for another podcast. All right. Take care.
You've just listened to another episode of Beyond Sermons. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and get notified. God bless and stay tuned.